So we, in fact, are beginning a kind of a formal retreat from a home practice perspective. And in doing that, how do we keep integrity to our practice? One of the things that we learned early on, I teach a lot with Prairie and Dana De Palma, who's here also attending this retreat. And one of the things we've learned is to accommodate the fact that there are demands that people have when they're home, and to not try to say, oh, don't respond to those demands, but rather to say, what is the wise relationship to these demands at home? Among other things, we have to at least prepare our own food, and if there's people living with us, we can, what we can do and not do and so forth, and what we can ask of them. So we accept this, but nonetheless, or and we can have our own integrity in relation to the weekend's practice. And you know what that would be. You can imagine that, because probably all of you have done this before in other situations. Attending a retreat is different than attending a workshop, because there's the in on a retreat, we're using silence and stillness as one of our primary methods for becoming more present in such a way that insight arises. So you just think about how you're going to do that in your situation now. Maybe it's during the walking periods that you, at the beginning of the walking period, you may have to go check on something, or at the end of the walking period, you turn on the stove or whatever it may be that you do, little things like this. But nonetheless, I do ask you to do a walking, or if that's not appropriate, some other kind of movement practice in the period of walking. You shorten the time. You will tell you how much time you have, but you then if, but if you have other things to do, you shorten the walking period, but you do it. You show up for yourself. And that's just what I mean by integrity, the integrity of showing up for ourselves. We learn to do that more and more, and the Dhamma is so helpful in this of learning to show up for ourselves with integrity. When we do that, and know, since we're also practicing letting go, so not demanding that conditions be the way we would prefer them, we become more and more not just within integrity, but we have a kind of dignity that you can feel. And not just when you're practicing, or not just on retreat, but you start to have a felt sense of, well, what is it for me to have an integrity and dignity? I said last night, and I will repeat later, and probably often in this retreat, one of the requirements is humility. Because when we get puffed up, we always got to defend what we're puffed up about. I'm right. They're wrong. They should think of me this way. We're demanding of something rather than being available for what is. We'll come to more about that in a moment. But so dignity, integrity, and humility. We're not doing those things. We're not doing them. We're cultivating them. We're letting our mindfulness, our compassion, our wisdom bring them about, because we're available to them. We understand. We more and more understand. Some of you have never heard any language like this in any retreat. Where is this coming from? It's coming from, as Tori made the reference just a moment ago in passing, it's coming from, how do we live the Dhamma on the street of life? And my interest in all of these decades has been empowering people to have the kind of relationship, empowered relationship with themselves, that they will achieve in their best moments on retreat as existing on the street of life, whatever the, when you walk down the street of life, all sorts of things happen. Great things, okay things, neutral things, not so good, and terrible things. So we're walking the street of life, but from the point of view empowered by treating it as practice. It's Dhamma. It's Dhamma. I don't have interest in teaching or learning things that can't show up in life. I don't get it. I never got it. I didn't understand the whole notion of that. So this is the view that I bring to this. These are my values that I bring to this. I'm not asking you to accept them, but I am asking that you be open to this kind of an attitude towards practice. And I very much appreciate it. And then there's a couple of practice points that I would make. First is that we will begin most of our sits, if not all of our sits, with varying lengths of time of what I term a preliminary practice, a preparing to practice. And I started doing this for myself a long, long time ago. And if I'm really to be more complete than I was last night, the first thing that I discovered was that it was natural for me to relax. And then I realized that, you know, all the, because I'd sit in these group practice meetings. This is back in the 80s, mid 80s. And that people were struggling with things I wasn't struggling with because I was relaxed. I was not trying so hard. I was relaxed, but I was very attentive in my relaxation. And that sort of, that became one of my principles, is to be very attentive, but in a relaxed way. And not so judging and all of this. We'll have our own experience with that later on as well. So that's the kind of the beginning of this for me. And then it went from there to a sense of, well, what's my mind like when I'm relaxed and attentive? And I realized that there was a kind of availableness, that I was available. And so I started, when I was teaching, to introduce this idea of being available. And then as I saw more and more that people didn't get started when they sat down, that people could wander around for 10, 15 minutes before they, I'm here to meditate kind of thing. I then started doing this arriving sequence, this arriving. And then about 7 years ago or some number like that, I sat a retreat with the Venerable Anaglio, in which he took us for a week every day through a preliminary practice where we would be doing what I'm doing in this arriving sequence, 45 minutes of it. And it was fantastic. It was fantastic. He used sutta, so there was a lot of different jumping around to focus, but it was really great. And that really gave me permission to more formalize this practice. And he used the phrase mindfulness front and center to establish ourselves. So that was one of the key parts of his teaching. And I've adopted that. And you'll hear me use that. We had a wonderful question last night. Well, but I don't experience mindfulness as front and center. And I really liked that question. That is a way of reminding front and center to our minds, if you will. Your felt sense of mindfulness can be a surround. It can be like a kind of vertical, can descend. It can rise up. It can appear all around you, lots of different things. And I'd be interested if when you notice things like this, maybe during the Q&A, you may want to ask something about your own experience. Then that'll be fun too. And so the other thing is that we do want to have fun. It's much too serious to take it seriously. You know, that seriously is an attitude. And our attitude is much more of a enthusiasm than striving. I know that you've had other teachers who really urge you to strive. So just think of this as balancing them. And then in between is the right thing for you. There is a role where we're serious, so therefore we do at times really apply will. That's true. There's a discipline. So like if we're collecting and unifying the mind around the breath, then there is a definite using of will to return to the breath, and at times saying to the mind, because you've got enough presence to do so, no. So you don't, it may start to go off, but it's like holding the dog on the leash when you're walking down a busy road where the dog would run into the road and get killed. You're firm about it, but you're not violent. So you're firm about, no. But those aren't the main experiences, but there is a role for that. And when we're at home, it's a chance to develop that skill more fully, because we're at home and there's nobody, we're not sitting someone next to us. So, you know, we got to be really super still because someone's next to us. We don't want to disturb them. No, it's because we're choosing to find stillness. And that may include that you move around a little bit. It's not that you don't move around. It is that you know what you're about as you're doing it. You are present. You are mindful in this way. And again, not imposing on others that we're living with when we're at home. We're kind to others. And if something comes up that was not in the agreement, we don't try to sort all this out in the moment with them. We stay in our retreat, and it's a condition. One year, sitting the 6 week or 3 month, I can't remember which one, at IMS, they decided for whatever reason, this was the time during the 3 month retreat to replace all the roofing and all of right over the meditation hall. So you would hear this. There would be different hammers going. And at first, you know, one had an attitude about that, but then it was just conditions. And then another year they had gotten the little town to bring the water and a big piping into IMS. And so they had to blow up rock. So you'd be sitting there and this go boom. And, you know, at first, you know, this is not what I'm used to, but then you get over it. And it's the same in home practice, you know. It's our attitudes make such a difference. The people online with me for 3.5 years had to hear the construction next door. And I had to be teaching with construction next door going on the whole time. And I could hear so much more than what people online could hear, because you could not hear their voices. And I'd ask repeatedly, I'd explain about what I do, and the voices, sometimes they were not ideal language to be hearing in the midst of a sitting in silence. And that was practice. That was practice. And we get confused. We can feel diminished by the behavior of others, or we can get disappointed in our own behavior and we feel diminished. Being diminished is not empowering. That's not compassion nor wisdom. The wisdom, the compassion is this too. Not me nor not mine, but this too, including, and this kind of a flowing with. And sometimes the flow's not pleasant, but it's still a flow. This so relates to the Four Noble Truths, which is my essential teaching, my essential learning. I'm still learning so much about the Four Noble Truths after all of these years, and want to honor the Venerable Sumedho as my root teacher in this. And it can all be included. for the most part, we do underestimate ourselves. And in doing that, we don't give ourselves a chance to just stay with, You will hear me say later that we start over when we get pulled off. But equally important, that I learned from Sharon Salzberg, wonderful teaching, the way she does that. And then what I discovered for myself is that we start where we are. So every sit, we start where we are. Any minute in a given sit, a walking period, we start where we are. That willingness to start where we are and to start over is part of this dignity and integrity and humility. Start to get the feel for this. This is for the street of life as well as for your practice. You could be 20, 40, 80 years old, and the cultivation never ends. At least it has not for me.